This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Like Steve Harvey says on Family Feud, we got a good one for you today. We got a real good one for you. It's a special Bite Me podcast. I'm John Lopez. It's not Scott Null. We miss him dearly, of course, some of us more than others. But this is the Bite Me podcast, the Texas saltwater fishing podcast with me, John Lopez. Normally, Captain Scott Null. We call it the best in Texas inshore and offshore insight. But this is a special show. I'm calling it the Guides Show, even though Scott is a guide. This is one of those where you can get all the fishing guides that all the questions you want for fishing guides in. And we've got some questions from you guys, and you can reach us at Lopez on Sports or Lopez on Sports on Instagram, at Lopez on Sports on Twitter. Hit me up on Facebook, like a lot of people have, and we'll get your questions answered. We'd like to say you can subscribe today and be a better fisherman tomorrow. And it is the Guide Show, so introductions are necessary. We're going around the table here at the Sports Radio 610 table studios. Start with my buddy across the table, Patrick Gardner, who I've known since he was literally 4 years old. One of the best fishermen you'll ever know. We'll get to the details of all these guys and where they, where you can reach them to catch some fish. But Captain Patrick Gardner is here from today. He'll tell you about where he's from and what he does. Captain Nick Mosley, a fish with his dad, can't even remember how many times. And Captain Nick Mosley as well is joining us. And Captain Caleb McCumber, who is Captain Scott Null's foil, if you will, more days than not. But guys, I'll start with you, Patrick. Glad you guys came in. Wanted to ask you some questions, but let's just talk about some of the particulars of where you fish and how long you've been doing it. I know the answer, but let's get it out there.
Yeah, I grew up fishing. Everybody in my family pretty much fishes, from my grandfather to my dad to all my uncles. Really in the Galveston area in East Matagorda. East Matagorda is where I fish now, and that's really where I grew up fishing. Like I said, a little bit of East Galveston as well.
And Captain Nick Mosley, obviously, as I just mentioned, fish with your dad a lot, fish with you a little bit. Your background and history and where you target.
Yeah, I mostly fish East Matagorda Bay as well. I grew up fishing that area. Obviously, my dad, he's one of the greatest people
Mike Mosley.
One of the greatest people to ever put feet in that bay system.
You're darn right he was. And Captain Caleb McCumber, and you and Scott have a little thing going on. I'm going to let you get some revenge, but you're fishing as well. Out of both Matagordas, I'm guessing, but elsewhere as well?
Yes, Matagorda, really from Sabine to Port Isabel is where we've been, but Matagorda is the primary areas that we've been in.
And you guys are competitive fishermen as well, and I'm going to get to the questions, the topics we have for today's show, because we've got a lot of topics from listeners, and we're really excited to be able to bring you this. We're going to talk about what your preferred targeted fish are, the preferred style, the approach, the techniques, because that's what we do here. We talk about fishing, but we're not just like the TV shows that just show you other guys catching fish. We want to teach you and help you, at least give you ideas of how we catch fish, and hopefully it'll help you catch fish as well. How to book a guide. I wanted to get this one in because we have three guides here. There's a smart way to do it. There's a good way to do it. There's a wrong way to do it, and what you need to look for in a guide. I want to get you guys' perspectives on habitat. Recent Texas Parks and Wildlife Department guidelines, of course, we know about that. Bait versus artificials, et cetera. We got some conditions that are going to be a little squirrely, a little wonky this weekend with some strong south winds, southwest winds. So when conditions are great or not great, like wind and runoff, what you're looking for, we're going to answer some of these questions. It's big trout time right now. It's the Star Tournament going on. We got a story from Nick that I want to get to in a minute about why you need to register for the Star Tournament. But it is big trout time. What would you consider to be the most common thing you're looking for when you're looking for a big trout? Not just fish, but the fish. We got a lot more stuff we're going to get to, and certainly a boat ramp confessional. But let's get to it. Let's start. Captain Nick, I want to get with you because you told a great story, and we're all big advocates of the Star Tournament. And certainly catching big trout, but you had was it a buddy or just someone that you saw on Facebook that somebody texted you? What's the story there with an 8-year-old, I believe, that caught a big trout or young kid?
I'm not sure how old he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. He's a guide out of Matagorda. He had a kid that was participating in the hook spit camp down there this week.
Yeah.
He caught one that pulled over 8 pounds on the Boga grips. They got excited about it because I think the kid believed that he was registered in the star tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out he wasn't.
So. Oh, that's painful.
Yeah. Whether he was in the younger kids division or the teen division, 8 pounds is a pretty solid fish, and it probably would have held up.
That would be on the board right now. Now, it might not last, but it would be on the board right now in the open division.
Yeah, it depends on the year. Some years, a heavy 6-pounder wins.
Yeah.
You know, it just depends on the quality of the fish this year. I think this year we're going to see big fish.
Some tens. I think we're going to see some tens. Caleb, I wanted to ask you, just in general, the guides are now, there's a category for guides with the Star Tournament. Now, the details of which, I guess, are when you help someone on your boat catch a star qualifying fish, you go into a lotto, so to speak, all the guides. So that's got to be pretty exciting. And how do you think that's going
to
play out?
Right. It's nice to be involved in the tournament after all of these years.
Mm-hmm.
We get excited to see our customers do well anytime.
Yeah.
So whenever we have a chance to bask in the glory with them of winning something, that can be very exciting.
Patrick, before you were a guide, I know you registered all the time because your dad made you, and good for him. What's closest you ever got?
I finished second a couple times.
That's crazy.
When I was younger. Held up to the last week twice.
You got to the last week twice?
Yeah, and lost.
Trout?
No, it was a gaff top and
gaff tops are sneaky. You can get on the board with some gaff top.
Yeah.
Once you get into them.
It might have just been the gaff top that held up to the last week. That was the main one I remember. Mm-hmm. But I've been on the board a couple times.
That's what I thought. I just couldn't remember for sure. Yeah. Joined by Captain Patrick Gardner, Captain Nick Mosley, and Captain Caleb McCumber. All right, let's get to some of these questions because we've got a lot of guys that listen. And by the way, thank you so much. We got thousands of guys listening every week, and that makes me feel good, even though, I don't really make a lot of money off of this. I'm just doing it for fun. But it is fun, and we love to fish. Your preferred targeted fish, preferred style, approach, techniques. This is kind of a general question, Patrick. I'll start with you, Pat. But like when you're targeting fish, what is the number one thing you're looking for right now as a guide and for your customers? Trout?
Yeah, trout mainly, and large trout. Mm-hmm. I like to specialize in going after what we call the big girls.
Right.
And wade fishing, throwing, during the winter, corkies, topwaters, large topwaters. That's my preferred way to fish, is out of the boat.
Right. Wading.
Throwing corkies, wading.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talk about that a lot. Let me get into more specifics, but with all three of you guys, but I'm going to start with you, Pat. When do you know to throw a topwater when you're wading versus a corky, a slow-sinking bait versus a twitch bait? Lily is real popular right now versus just a big, soft plastic. I have my thoughts on it, but I'm out of this conversation because I got you three guys, and I think our listeners want to hear, all right, I know I need to wade. How do I know what to throw?
So the biggest thing is the wind going to allow you to throw a topwater? Mm-hmm. I'll always start off. I love throwing a topwater. We all love to see the big blowups.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times if they start short striking it, put something just below the surface. Tie on a fat boy floater or just tie on a fat boy in general.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, if they're coming up for the topwater, that's going to be the ticket. If they're not hitting the topwater and taking it all the way,
right?
You can tie something on just below the surface and get them to commit.
What do you think, Nick? Like you know you're going to wade, you're out of the boat, the conditions are what they are, whether good, bad, or indifferent. How do you distinguish, right, I need to throw this?
Yeah, a lot of it's a time of year, too, mm-hmm. but I'm like Pat, yeah. I like to throw a topwater.
Mm-hmm. To start.
Yeah, Super Spook's my go-to, the clown.
Mm-hmm.
People that fish with me know I love the clown.
Mm-hmm. And the clown is, for those who don't know?
It's got a red head, gold body with a white belly.
Mm-hmm.
I just like that. I think it's the sound and that bigger profile bait. You get bigger bites on it.
Right.
Tournament fishing, probably don't want to throw a topwater because they'll break your heart.
Yeah.
End up getting unbuttoned right at you. I think everybody's experienced that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to some tournament for sure.
I agree with Pat. Another thing you can throw if they're kind of short striking is a big soft plastic with a light lead head. That'll mm-hmm. kind of keep it towards the surface. And if nothing's going on and you just know that there are fish there, you can always put a heavier lead head on.
Yeah.
Or maybe throw a soft dine. It sinks a little bit faster. We fished a big tournament this last weekend, and the soft dine.
That what you did?
It was the key. for our big trout.
Mm-hmm. Caleb, that's what I do sometimes, and I don't know where you stand. I want to get your perspective on what the question is. But sometimes I just like to throw a big, soft plastic. It's still a big bait. It just gets down lower quicker.
Yeah, it seems to be a higher percentage bait, no mm-hmm. doubt. You can do so many things with it. You can cover so many water columns. You could, like Nick said, you can use a light jig head and keep it up high. You can drag it on bottom. You can work all three columns at once if you really want to.
So what's your answer to the first question in terms of, all right, what do I throw? I've got these rods rigged three different ways, four different ways. How do you decide this is what I'm going with when you pull up? Is it just going to be topwater automatically, or do you look at something else?
I probably don't own two trout topwaters in my entire boat. I'm a quirky guy. I'll throw it 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bend that quirky to do different things, to get it deeper, get it shallower. I'll work it slow. A lot of my friends make fun of me because I'll work it real fast.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, and it's only my opinion because my favorite saying is fish don't care what it is we think we know about them.
Yeah.
But I feel like if they will hit a topwater, they will hit a quirky. But just because they'll hit a quirky doesn't mean they're aggressive enough to hit that topwater.
Right.
If that makes
sense. I'm actually with you on that. I do much the same thing.
But I was really lucky 10, 12 years ago when I came to Matagorda to immediately get in the boat with a man that is one of the most prolific big trout fishermen in Matagorda. You don't hear a lot about him because he doesn't make a lot of noise, but he made a believer in that fat boy with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my confidence bait. I might change colors with it, but I'm not going far from it.
Well, Scott and I always talk about confidence. Let me ask you about that a couple things real quick, because I throw what I'm most confident in. You guys know this. I'm always, my go-to is the popping cork with different weights. I've thrown a fat boy on a popping cork just to make some noise and let it slink. I mean, you know, but we all have our confidence. I like the corkies. I like the slow sinking. I'll go to them. But when you're throwing that, people have a million different opinions on how to work it. And Scott and I have talked about it, and we have our preferred, but I want to go around the horn here, starting with you working a corky. You've done it for a million years.
Well, the true answer really, in my opinion, is there's no wrong way to do it. If your corky isn't spinning in circles and looking completely unnatural, you're not doing it wrong.
Yeah.
There's days when I bend the tail up and I'm working it like a super spook as fast as I can go.
Yeah.
There's days when I bend the tail down and I'm working it real slow. When Pat and I fished the Matagorda Legends 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
we were literally letting our corkies sit on bottom and reeling them as slow as we could without moving our rods, and the trout were ripping the rods out of our hand.
That's crazy.
So you see all the, if you think you're working it slow, work it slower, and whatnot dialogue, but it's a situational thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to mess it up. Find something that works for you. What turned the light bulb on?
What is the most consistent thing?
My best way of explaining it is that is a Spook Junior that sinks. So I'll let it sink down.
That's what Patrick has told me.
Yes, yeah. I'll let it sink down. I'll walk the dog. I'll mm-hmm. put some pauses in it. I'll burn the reel to, you know, if something's looking at it and you burn it, maybe you'll get a reaction strike. But at the end of the day, you're doing Scott Knowles' staying alive cadence walk. And that's where I start at. I usually start at about
Mary 7. Had a Little Lamb.
Is that what it is? Mary Had a Little Lamb. But I'll almost always start at 7 twitches and pause and mm-hmm. then go from there. Sometimes I'll go 12, 15, sometimes I'll go 3, you know, but that's
what makes you bend it? What makes you bend a corky? Because I've never really done that. I'll get to you guys in a second, but I'm like, if it bends on purpose, I'll try it. I mean, by accident, I'll try it. But what makes you bend a corky?
So I bend the nose down
mm-hmm.
Almost as far as I can bend it, and then I'll put a slight bend in the tail, and it seems to make that nose dig.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're twitching it, it's keeping its depth that you've let it sink to, but it's giving you a nice steady walk the dog.
Yeah.
Now, if you've bent that tail a little bit too much one way or the other, when you reel it, the what you're looking for is whenever you get it close to you and you reel it in quickly,
mm-hmm.
does it spin or does it stay upright? If it's staying upright, then it's doing what it's supposed to out there.
Right.
The best way you can get confident with the corky is go somewhere that's got clear water, stand up in your boat.
That's what I've done.
Swimming pool.
Well, yeah. The pool though is, you're on a short line.
Yeah,
you're not
true.
Getting a true
mm-hmm.
a true reading of what that's doing.
Yeah, and I think they float a little different in fresh water.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Too. That's yeah. true.
Yes. So I learned how, whenever I got confident in mine, I was in Port Isabel standing on top of a tower, which I know everybody doesn't have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
But get some clear water, put on a bright orange corky or something, throw it out there and just watch it go.
What's your answer, Nick, on how to work that corky and how you determine what you're going to do?
I usually start off kind of a medium speed, not too fast, not too slow, mm-hmm. just to keep it off the bottom. Maybe a little lower in the water column. I always bend my corky tail down just
mm-hmm.
a hair.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way I was taught to do it.
Right.
And I always do it. Sometimes I'll bend
confidence.
It up. Yeah. Yeah. If people around me are getting bites and I'm not getting bites, I'll tweak my corky a little bit more or I'll speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I'm out there by myself, which I very rarely do, but mm-hmm. I'll change the speed up as well just to try to get the bites. You know,
right.
I know that there's fish there and there's active bait and you can tell that the bait's nervous
mm-hmm.
or just from being there the day before, we know that there were fish there. I'll grind it out.
Sure.
And I'll just spend a lot of time in that area and I'll just try a lot of different things. And if the corky isn't working, I'll change.
Right.
Yeah. If that bait's there,
sometimes
and you're not
they
getting
don't
bites.
Want it.
Right.
You just keep throwing it.
Yeah. Oh, you got to make them. You put it right on their nose.
We've all had days where we fished from daylight until 2 o'clock in the same spot and didn't catch a thing. But from 2 o'clock till 9 o'clock that night was,
right.
you know, banner days of our fishing career.
Yeah, Patrick, I know you know, I've been with you enough that you grind. I mean, you will grind and grind and grind. And people say, man, that Patrick gets lucky. He catches big trout. No, he catches trout because he knows how to work it and to stay consistent. That's part of it as well. Not just how you're working it, but just knowing that there's fish there and having the confidence.
Yeah, during the wintertime, we probably keep a corky on about 90% of the time. I know I personally do.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that those fish are there, I think that's a big mistake people make is they're going to make a move too quick. They're in an area. They have all the right signs.
Yeah.
But they don't catch a fish right away. They get up and leave. If the right bait's there and you know those fish are there, I mean, I'll sit on the same fish for 8 hours. These guys know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I might not catch but one fish a day, but
it's the fish.
It's the fish that you want.
Yeah.
So I'm all about knowing, understanding what you're looking for. And if the right bait are there and you know those fish are there, you just wait for them to eat. There's no point in, you know, running all over the bay.
And so when do you know to run?
Well,
that's a loaded question.
That it is. Yeah. It's a time on the water thing.
You can feel fish, I believe.
Yeah,
I know you guys know this.
Yeah, and we're talking about big trout. We're not talking about 15 inchers. You know, they've been there. You know, they've seen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're experienced just like we are.
Right.
You know, that's why they're big.
Mm-hmm.
So
if I'm catching 5 and 6 pound redfish on a shoreline, I'll sit on that because typically there's some trout coming behind them at some point.
Right. I agree with that. I do agree with that for sure. This turned into kind of a corky conversation, but I love it. And I think a lot of our listeners are going to love it too, because it's truly one of those baits, Patrick, I'll start with you, that is kind of mythical because everybody says you catch big trout with these. You catch big trout with these. You can catch a lot of trout with them too. I mean, you can get into fish, you know, like let's say not birds, not schooling fish, but you can get into a series of fish, and that might be the go-to bait regardless of what you're throwing, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's not only a big fish thing. I mean, mm-hmm. we'll go out to certain spots, and you'll hammer 15 to 18 inches fish, you know. Mm-hmm. You'll catch undersized fish on them. It's not just a big fish deal. During the wintertime, it just seems to be that those fish want to eat that slower suspending bait.
Right. All right, so let's move on now to what we got. I'm with Captain Patrick Gardner, Nick Mosley, and Caleb McCumber on the Bite Me podcast. This is going to be good because these are professional guys that know what they're doing, have been doing it a long time. A lot of our listeners, you know, book you guys, book guides if it's not you guys. Nick, what would you tell someone who's not like me, that fishes, you know, pretty much every week, but is not an amateur, just a good fisherman that's looking for a guide in a new bay system? What do they need to be looking for here?
That's a great question. They need to call the guide and have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
They need to let him know what their expectations are and ask questions about how he fishes, mostly what he's been doing.
Right.
If somebody calls me and tells me that they want to go out there and catch a limit of flounder, I am not their guide.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. Do I know places that we might be able to go catch
flounder? Sure.
Yeah, you know, but that's not my specialty. It's not the fish that I'm really passionate about targeting.
Mm-hmm.
That would be mostly trout, you know, redfish too. A lot of times redfish will mix in with them.
Right. Caleb, what are we looking at when people call you? What is the smart person trying to get a guide asking?
Well, you know, like Nick said, you need to have a conversation with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I have people and call me and say, hey, we want to go catch big trout, if I'm not on them, I'm going to tell them that.
Yeah.
And most of the guides I know are pretty honest guys that way. But I honestly think for the best experience for the customer is they really need to be honest with themselves.
How good they are.
Yes, and their abilities, and let us go from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have people show up that have a hard time casting, but they want to go waiting for big trout.
Yeah.
Or even the worst, and it's my pet peeve, is they have a hard time controlling their rods. They have control the accuracy of their cast, controlling mm-hmm. their fish. And they show up with six people to get on my boat, and it's an absolute war zone all day long.
Unrealistic expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick, when people are booking you, what do you want them to really, what should they really know, and what should they really ask?
Yeah, I mean, I think they covered most of the basis on that. You need to talk to the guide
mm-hmm.
and be honest about their expectations and what they want to go out there and do. And then, you know, for the most part, the guide's going to be very honest
mm-hmm.
and let you know what fish he's on, what he mainly does, and then really just go from there.
All right. Want to get to some more fishing topics here, but before go around the horn again here real quick, just on perspectives on Texas Parks and Wildlife guidelines recently, five trout across the board. You guys know how I feel about it. Wanted to get what you guys thought. Start with you, Pat.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think it's going to really help out East Galveston Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And up in the Sabine area, if we can just get some salty water.
You're telling me that.
Yeah, with the amount of rain we've had in the last couple of years, I mean, it's really put a hurting on both those fisheries. And I think the five fish limit is going to do nothing but help. It can't
hurt
anything.
Where you fish is proof positive that it works, because East Matagorda Bay, I used to fish there all the time. As you guys know, I kind of moved my base of operation to Sabine when it was piping hot, and now it's cold because of all the freshwater runoff. I come back, you know, to East Matagorda, some of those areas down low, South Texas, where they have the five trout limit. You see it. You see it every day.
Yeah,
that
we
there's
see
a
it
difference.
Every day. Yes, it's definitely an improvement. Just the quality of fish we're catching now.
Right.
I've heard the arguments from the guys over in Galveston, and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not trying to, you know, create a bunch of enemies. But our fish are better.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember as a kid going out there and catching the quality of fish that we
consistently
these days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even with, you know, like the days that I would go with my dad and Tommy Kuntz and,
mm-hmm.
and Bill Puszczowski, we didn't catch the fish that we're catching now.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that us three around this table are better than them.
No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying you're not. I'm just saying, but it's not that.
Right.
Right, Caleb? I mean, it's the fact that these numbers work. And if people are complaining, okay, complain, but we're telling you it works. The fish are better.
Well, I think it was a variety of stimuli, you know,
mm-hmm.
between the limit. We saw the improvement a year or two after the limit.
Yeah.
But you're seeing different amounts of rainfall that's producing different amounts of bait. There's multiple ways you can look at it. Like Nick said, we're not scientists, but
pressure,
you know, everybody that's listening to this podcast has seen the fights over social media.
Oh, yeah.
And it hasn't hurt us a bit. I mean, East Matagorda rivals Baffin now for the place to catch a big trout.
Right.
So I don't.
And that just wasn't the case.
No. Yeah. No. You know, Matagorda lost almost all of its grass off the south shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
When the grass was there, I had days that I still will never forget. But since that limit change and whatever other couple of things happened,
mm-hmm.
it's been a great improvement.
And I'm not going to get into the whole, you know, croaker thing discussion. Captain Scott and I have talked about it a lot. But even just the limit helps. Even if you throw croaker, you can tell that it's still helping, you know, it's still helping the fishery, because even guys that are throwing croaker down there have to stop at five. I mean, unless they want to break the law, right? I mean, yeah.
How many fish can you eat? You know,
I mean, always say that. And it's better fresh.
That's right.
I used to, you know, when I was young and dumb and just really angry at the trout, I would like almost measure my success by how many, you know, quart bags of fillets I had in the freezer. That's stupid. I'm kind of embarrassed that I did that.
Yeah.
Because it's better to eat the fish fresh, first of all. And if I have one quart bag of fillets in the freezer, that's probably good enough for a meal. You know, I mean.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All three of us being guides, we all have the cleaning table pitchers, and they don't make it to the public very often.
Yeah.
But when I'm fishing by myself, frankly, I'm too lazy to clean a fish.
Yeah.
So they're all going back.
I'll catch and release. I'll catch and release. All right. Let's get to some questions here that's going to help some guys that are fishing this weekend. It's going to be windy, and that's why I put this question in that we got. When it's windy, Patrick, it can get wet, it can get dirty, it can get rough, it can be not as much fun. But when you're facing a lot of wind or maybe freshwater runoff, when the conditions are not ideal, it's not that bluebird sky and the trout green water, what are you looking for? Like, generally speaking, and I'm not talking for big trout. I know you guys are big trout hunters and you're tournament fishermen as well, but I'm talking about, like, you know, regular folks wanting to go out and catch a 5-trout limit, whether it's 18 or 26.
Yeah, just depending on how hard the wind is. If I'm going out just to catch some fish with clients, you know, if we're drifting, mm-hmm. you know, first of all, I'm going to be looking for streaks. I'm going to be looking for bait. I'm going to be looking for slicks. Really just trying to get a little protection somewhere,
mm-hmm.
get closer to, you know, if we got a hard south wind, maybe get a little closer to that south shoreline. I mean, that's mainly it. You're still just going out fishing, looking for all your signs, but mm-hmm. That wind, obviously, it's going to blow out certain areas of the bay. So you can go ahead and mark out, you know, if it's blowing 25 out of the south, like they're saying it might do on Saturday,
right?
The north shoreline probably isn't going to be real good.
It's not going to be where you want to be.
So, I mean, you can mark off probably about half the bay and make it a little easier on yourself. Me personally, I'd probably get a little closer to the south shoreline,
mm-hmm.
find some better water. Trying to find some streaks.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because it's easy to, a lot of times when it's blowing like that, you don't see as much bait. I don't know, for whatever reason, it just seems like, you know, it's far and few between. So you're looking for other signs. When you're running that shoreline, you know, what's a good trick for you to, or good that it jogs your memory to say, you know what, that is something that I need to stop and give it a shot.
There is something in my brain that I recognize when I'm riding in the boat, especially drifting. Cannot tell you what it is.
That's experience.
Yeah. It's just something that I see and mm-hmm. recognize as being fishy in the water, being a little piece of bait. Something I really key in on almost every time I go out of there, always try to find something different.
Mm-hmm. That's you're reading my mind. That's what I tell people all the time. Look for something different.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, like if we have a south wind or southeast wind, there are depth changes coming off of the south shoreline. Mm-hmm. So when I set up on a drift, I might set up my first drift right up on the bank. And especially with a 20-mile-an-hour wind, you're going to drift pretty fast. So you can cover some ground. And if I catch a few fish or get a couple bites, I'll make a mental note
mm-hmm.
of the depth.
Yeah.
And then I'll move down maybe a quarter of a mile.
At that depth.
Mile, and I'll start focusing and keying in on that depth.
Because
mm-hmm. a lot of times those fish, most of them act the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's pressure driven, water temperatures, you know, time of year driven. So you'll find them in a lot of the same situations.
Sure.
They're reactive creatures.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to ask you, Caleb, because he's reading my mind. That's one of the things that I do. And I know I've fished a lot. I mean, obviously not like you guys every day, but something makes me stop. And it's subconscious. You know, it's experience. It's 40, 50 years of doing this, either riding on somebody's boat or fishing myself. But that's not helping our listeners, you know. And so what the other thing you said, I totally agree with the first part, is the other thing you said is what I think really helps listeners, something different. What could that be? What are some of the things that are different that you think, boom?
Well, I look for tide lines.
I'm a big fan of that too.
Yeah, but as Nick's already said, and Pat also, the color changes. That's big for me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I can find one that's going with the wind and I can ride that color change for a long distance through different depths. I'll throw in the dirty side and I'll throw in the clean side.
Mm-hmm.
And typically on the days whenever it's off, like it's supposed to be Saturday, that's where your success can come.
Yeah.
If you want to wade, then if I can find a drain that has water being pushed out of it by that wind, or even if that wind mm-hmm. is the right direction to be pushing a tide in, then that's
different.
Yes, yes. Fish are creatures of opportunity and reactive animals.
Right.
So if we can just figure out where that easier meal is coming from, whether it be that dirty water on that color line or that current bringing them bait,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what you're looking for.
One thing, Patrick, is I call it hopscotch fishing. A lot of times when it's a big, strong wind like this weekend, I'll get up right on the shoreline and put the talon down and just fan cast everywhere because I don't want to get out of the boat, because who knows, you know, until you know that there's fish there, and then lift the talon, let it drift me about 10 feet, put the talon back down. So it's almost like a wade. You know, I call it just kind of hopscotching. I mean, those are some of the things. What are some other tricks like in wind that you do to make sure that you can stay in the zone? I know you can get three or four, you know, maybe drift socks or whatever, but what are some of the strategies in wind that you use?
Yeah, once you find them, definitely having a drift sock. I'll put two out when it's blowing over 20. You can put one in the front on your nose and then put one in the back to really slow you down.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I won't throw them out if we're just trying to cover water. Like Nick said.
Yeah, just cast a lot and fast.
Yeah, like Nick said, for the most part, they'll be holding on those drop-offs. And if you find them in that certain depth of water and you're wanting to hold a little bit longer in those depths, mm-hmm. that's when you pull up and throw those drift socks so you can slow that drift down when you're hitting those best areas.
Right.
Then when you're done, you can slide up a little further up the shoreline and hit that same depth of water.
Mm-hmm. What about you? Just like techniques now in wind. I talk about my, like, I like to do the hopscotch or drift socks. I mean, those are pretty much the basics. Is there anything else that you have to do, you want to do? Does it affect the bait you're throwing?
Yeah, it will. Mm-hmm. If it depends on what I'm throwing. If I'm throwing a shrimp, if it's really windy, sometimes I feel like you got to work it a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to draw attention to that cork popping. I'm a firm believer that popping that cork attracts fish.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's a super calm day.
I've had this fight with several people.
Yeah. If it's a super calm day, I won't pop the cork as hard. I'll just make it click.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to keep tension in your line.
Mm-hmm.
When those fish bite it, a lot of times I'll feel them before I even see my cork react.
That's what you want to happen.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you want to happen for sure. Yeah. What about windy days in terms of what you're throwing, how you're throwing, and what your technique is?
Well, I'm throwing the loudest cork that I can possibly find, and then I'll crack it as loud as I can once or twice and then actually let it sit there mm-hmm. so whatever I did call in has a chance to find that bait without jerking it away from it.
Yeah.
I'll also put a little piece of split shot maybe 6 inches above the bait
mm-hmm.
to where it's holding it fairly steady underneath where that popping sound's
that's
coming from.
On a windy day. I've done that, yeah.
That's a very, very good point.
Yeah, I've done that once or twice myself because it'll just flop around on top.
Right. I don't want them to have to look too hard for it. Mm-hmm. I want them to look just hard enough to be excited enough to eat it.
Right, right.
Yeah, and when you're trying to figure out depths and stuff of the fish too, because that's a factor, you know, how deep you're fishing your baits.
Right.
A lot of times I'll set up rods differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll have two customers throwing one that might be
oh for sure
almost 4 feet
yeah
deep,
you want different styles in the water
deep, and I'll have one rigged up short
mm-hmm.
and if somebody starts getting a lot more bites than other people, then you know I'll react.
No, that's a good point. I used to do that with Patrick and his dad and your dad a lot. Like someone would be on the top, someone would be on the bottom, someone would be on a cork. I mean, that's another strategy that works.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, you know, we're talking mainly a lot about our bay system, East Galveston, but you know, windy day, and when I'm down in Port Mansfield, I might go to a windward shoreline where it's blowing like crazy and
right.
you're getting wind-driven current, and I'll even throw a topwater in mm-hmm. knee-deep water when it's just absolutely howling. Put a she-dog on and
yeah.
work the heck out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's a lot of times if I'm fishing tournaments down there. And
I was just
going to
say, that's a tournament strategy there.
Yeah, so...
Because you're going to get beat up, and it's not going to be a lot of fun, but that's where a lot of the bait's rolling into, right, Caleb?
Right, absolutely. Nick gives me all kinds of grief because when we have the Northerns coming in,
mm-hmm.
he'll be standing in the middle of the cove 60 yards behind me just catching a fish every cast.
That doesn't sound like a bad thing to me.
I tend to like catching fish.
Yeah,
yeah,
especially
like
2 to 5 pounders.
But you're on the shoreline.
I'm getting beat up. I'm hitting the grass
yeah.
with a corky over and over and over, and it usually pays off.
Yeah,
you know.
Now let's make this clear. I didn't do this at the top, and this is on me. Your preferred target fish is redfish, mostly you, right, Caleb?
Nick and Pat are still mad at me about it, but I've converted over to redfish. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys, Nick and Pat, are more trout, big trout, obviously.
Yeah.
And all right, so that leads to the next question that we want to get to is tournament. And this is tournament season. Some of us are going to be doing, you know, we're not professionals like you guys, but we do a lot of charity tournaments. There's a lot of fundraising tournaments. There's a lot of Thursday night, Friday night, whatever, you know, 8 guys tournaments. And it's a different mindset. It's interesting to me because – when you're fishing a tournament, you're targeting big trout, obviously, or big redfish, whatever it is. I tend to find, Nick, I'll start with you, like people that I've seen fishing in tournaments get so hasty so fast. You need to be yourself, don't you?
Yeah.
Keep doing the thing, like on a Saturday afternoon when you're fishing and you're using all the same strategies you hear on the podcast here or that you know, or you're being as patient, you know, with your confidence bait as you can be. don't change that when you get into a tournament, right?
It's very easy to get spun up and spend a lot of time running around in a boat. And the longer you have that rod in the water, the better your chances are.
Yeah.
We just went through this last weekend. We fished the Texas Trio out of Matagorda.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with a game plan the night before based on what we'd been doing that week.
Yeah.
And had a backup, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, if that didn't work out. But we stuck to that game plan,
right.
And we were successful. We had a heck of a day fishing. We ended up coming up just short. I think we were one place out of the money in a lot of categories.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like we had a really good day. I mean, we competed right. against some of the best fishermen that fish our bay system.
Mm-hmm. So the tournament strategy, I know you're going to agree with that, Caleb and Patrick, you do. But Caleb, you know, at the same time, people get out of their skin. You know, they're out of their comfort zone or their confidence level. Well, what else would you tell them when you're fishing a tournament? Everybody wants to compete, whether it's a $100 eight guys tournament or a $10,000 tournament. What are you telling people?
Right. Well, tournament fishing is, in my opinion, totally different than your everyday fishing.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have a plan going into it that morning and have enough confidence in that plan to stick with it. But I'm really big on time management. And if I roll into a spot and catch a couple of small ones and I don't feel like anything's going to happen, mm-hmm. I'm not giving it another second.
So you're kind of the opposite. You will change your strategy a little bit, but you're going to know it in advance.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, right. I'm looking at the weather and mm-hmm. I have in my mind five or six different spots, because you can have your two favorite spots in your mind and all that goes away when that SCB is sitting there whenever you show up.
Yeah.
But there again, you know, we're Nick and Pat and I were at that tournament. We waited for 8.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Waited with a D.
Waited with a D.
Yes. It wasn't a comfy wade. We'll put it that way.
Is that right?
No,
it was pretty.
It was not a hard bottom.
I did catch two.
Oh, was
snook.
It that big mud that comes up to your knee?
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks.
You know, but
I'm not mad at them that much anymore, man. That's tough waiting.
Oh yes, but having your plan and sticking with it, a tournament is stressful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only is your competitive edge in there, but there's things that happen throughout the day that will spin you out and make you lose track. But just having your plan and sticking with it, and at the end of the day, it either worked or it didn't.
Right.
You know, for the Legends, Pat and I were fishing, and it was really foggy, and I missed where we wanted to park the boat by about 500 yards. I didn't tell them that at the time. Pat just noticed that I was wading really fast, and what I was trying to do was get to where I wanted to be before another boat got in there.
Yeah.
So Pat catches up with me, and I bet we were half a mile away from the boat, if not more. And we're wading along, and it had gotten real cold, mm-hmm. and we knew the fish had probably went a little bit deeper, and we waded about as far as we could possibly go, and I know they should be there. I drove past them the night before and saw slicks. I knew they should be there, but
yeah.
They weren't eating. So I tell Pat, I said, Pat, you need to hurry up and get back to the boat. You know, were you at 27?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're 27 time. Years old with a 37-year-old guy, and I don't know, Donnie's like 80, I don't know. But you're the guy gets sent back to the boat. So Pat gets about, you know, half
Hope
a mile, three
this.
Quarter
no,
mile.
No.
Yeah. He gets about half a mile, three quarter mile back of the boat. And I looked at Donnie, I said, where is this kid at? And my lure's out. When I turn and look, I almost got the rod jerked out of my hand.
Oh, I love that.
I'd already called Pat on the phone twice telling him, hurry up and get the boat. Now I'm calling him saying, hurry up and get back down here and
yeah.
get out here and fish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the plan would have been flawless if I wouldn't have panicked and sent him back to the boat. We had a boom, 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 caught our trout, and it would have been heroes. But you never know that until way in time.
Patrick, you've caught big, big, big trout. I mean, you're a big trout fisherman. When you're in a tournament and you're targeting big trout, do you get out of your skin a little bit, or do you stick with what you always do?
Well, that's the biggest fight, is you don't want to get outside of yourself. Do what you do and do what you know is the biggest thing. Early on when I started fishing tournaments, you know, you would get a little whacked out.
Buzzing around
mentally.
Everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. You need to just focus in on what you're doing, the areas where you know there are fish, and fish it hard.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest things, don't get outside of yourself. Don't spend a ton of time running. You know, I've been in tournaments, especially big bays, like you're down in Mansfield or in
mm-hmm.
Corpus. There's so much water. You find yourself wasting hours running
yeah.
to different spots. You really need to just find your fish and you know, try and get them to eat.
Go ahead. I thought you had something that you wanted to say. You raised your hand, but it doesn't matter. What about big trout, Nick? Kind of what I just told him. How are you targeting big trout versus, you know, trout on a tournament day? I mean, that sounds like a rudimentary question, but they're different. They react different. They fish different. I mean, they swim different. They're just a different breed. How do you know when there's going to be big trout? How do you attack them?
A lot of that comes into pre-fishing and the time you spend on the water before the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously can't expect to have not been on the water for a month and go out there and do well in a tournament. You can't.
Right.
I mean, you have to know where they're at. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes into the work you put in before the tournament.
And so, like, let's say you're fishing pre-tournament. It's a Friday and tournament's Saturday. If you get one good bite, are you out of there? Do you know that that's the play? What's your strategy in terms of scouting for tournaments?
I kind of have a different mindset about
this. Because I do that. I'll have one good bite. I might not even hook it. I mean, land it. I'm out. I'm done.
There's been a lot of tournaments.
I know there's big fish there.
There's been a lot of tournaments I've fished where we did that. We mm-hmm. caught one or two and then backed out and then came back the next day and then they just weren't there. And there was, it was the Trout Blast. Like, it's a tournament out of Matagorda. Mm-hmm. It's a oil field tournament.
Right.
You know, with customers. And my customer booked me the day before to pre-fish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get on this bite of 4 to 7.5 pound trout.
Man.
And I looked at him and I was like, we're going to keep catching them. And he's like, really? We shouldn't back off of these fish? I knew that those fish were tide driven mm-hmm. and that they were probably going to be back there the next day anyway. So we enjoyed the day. Because a lot of times you'll back off of those fish where you could have caught them. And then they're gone the next day, so why not enjoy them while you're there?
And I got a good story about that. About 2 years ago, before the trio, Nick and I were fishing, I think, on a Wednesday or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And we roll up to an area, and it looks phenomenal. We hop out. Nick sticks one on a super spook pretty quick. And then, like, 3 or 4 casts later, I catch about a 31, 32-incher.
Jesus.
At the tip of his rod.
Yeah. It followed me all the way up. Actually, I watched her hit it about, 3 feet in front of me.
That's crazy.
And then scream drag.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
There were monster fish all in there, to say the least. On that next cast, I had one pull off.
Mm-hmm.
I probably fought her for 2 or 3 minutes, and we were throwing big super spooks. That's why we're saying we don't like to throw them during tournaments.
Yeah.
You get them in the back,
you get
hooked,
pissed off.
They're so heavy,
yeah.
And they come up and shake. They're easy to spit. But we decided to back off those fish, mm-hmm. and they weren't there the next day. We should have just stayed there and caught
a good
and
they weren't
multiple
little fish.
Monsters. No, they were.
The one he caught was over 31 on the rod. I would have put it at 32. It had spawned out
and
still weighed
30,
almost 9
pounds. I don't need to hear this stuff.
Yeah, it was spawned out and still almost weighed 9 pounds.
Yeah, so that's, it was a giant.
Crazy. Fish. Caleb, I think you're in my school of thought. I want to know where they are because it's, like you said, different mindset. I mean, I love, don't get me wrong, I love catching an 18-inch trout. I mean, I'll catch those all day and have a blast. But if I'm in a tournament or pre-fishing and I get one good bite, I'm out.
No, yeah, I'm exactly the same. I'm not going to sore lip more than I absolutely have to. I might catch one and then go to a similar area to maybe see if some more there.
Yeah.
I do a lot more red fishing than we do trout fishermen, fishing, but mm-hmm. it's definitely one of the rules in red fishing is even if you just see their wake, see anything, get out of there mm-hmm. and don't mess with them again until you need them.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, we're going to do the same thing.
Well,
especially if we're in a big trout tournament.
By
really
and large.
Yeah. It depends on, what time of year, what tournament it is. You don't want to sore lip those fish.
Let's say there's some guys that are in first time tournaments. We'll go around the horn. Then we're going to do boat ramp confessional. Tip, like a quick tip for someone who's an amateur that's in a charity tournament, wants to impress his wife or girlfriend or both. And then, what are you telling him right now?
As far as
a first time tournament fisherman.
Or have they been pre-fishing? I guess is the biggest question.
Yeah. Well, probably let's assume they have.
Yeah. I mean, don't have too high of expectations, first of all. Mm-hmm. If it's your first tournament, have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and try and learn. And, of course, try and catch the fish you're after.
Right.
But for the most part, there's a lot of really good, serious tournament fishermen out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're fishing in a big-time tournament, I would say if it was your first tournament, just don't have super high expectations. I think even when I first started fishing tournaments, I had really high expectations, mm-hmm. thinking we were going to go out there and just dominate, and that wasn't the story. There's some really, really good fishermen out there.
Right.
So I would say, do your best to pre-fish, find your fish, fish hard, but don't, just don't have unrealistic expectations.
Anything to add there, Nick?
Yeah, I would tell them to key in on one thing, not try to key in on everything. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Say it's a trio tournament, maybe not try to catch a trio. If you're really good at catching flounder mm-hmm. and you know you can catch a four-pounder, that's probably going to do really, really well
in
the tournament.
Point. Yeah.
So Pat said it. I mean, don't have unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, go with what you know and maybe not set the bar too high.
Right.
You know, you're not going to blow it out of the park your first time unless you get lucky.
Right.
Which, you know, people have those days. But, mm-hmm. yeah.
What do you say, Caleb?
Well, it's a slight skew from the actual question, but a good friend of mine who's a red fisherman, he fishes the Elite Series. He's mm-hmm. won a couple of them. He mm-hmm. gave me probably the most real answer that there ever was. And it was whenever I decided to get more into the redfish stuff. And I mm-hmm. asked him, I said, hey, you know, any pointers or tips for me? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I did. And this was just after his second Elite victory. He said, I entered every tournament I could for 7 or 8 years. I got my face kicked in, and I figured out who kicked my face in and why they kicked it in. Yeah. And after 7 or 8 years of learning why I was getting beat up, I started winning stuff.
That's true, for sure.
So
that, for sure. And really, I mean, you can get lucky and win early, but you can't be lucky in tournaments.
Justin Lowry, a guy we fish with all the time, his uncle entered the amateur division of the same series that Cade's fishing.
Mm-hmm.
First tournament they'd ever fished, from my understanding, 2 redfish stringer, 18 and a half pounds.
Good gracious.
You know, there's people that have been fishing redfish tournaments for 10 years and never brought in 18 pounds.
Yikes. All right, so you're in your boat, Caleb, and you're going to a spot, and you know you need to get to this spot, and you cut a little close. This is what Captain Scott was telling us the other day on the podcast. I'll let you pick up the story. Were you with him, Nick?
No, but I almost had to go get him.
So rehash the story, first of all.
Well, yes.
This is a boat ramp confessional here, and basically you had to, like, carry your boat off of a grass shoreline.
Not carrying wasn't an option. So Taylor Roth, who is one of my best buddies and redfish partners, we were in a undisclosed backwater, and we're catching 5 and 6 pound trout every cast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear sailing, great time. And we, being the people that we are, said, man, forget these trout. We want to go catch redfish.
Oh, great.
And Taylor says, well, I know this one spot, but I haven't been back there in a good while, and a lot of stuff has changed up. And I said, well, my favorite line is, well, it's insured. So off we go through these marshes and flats and drains and all this stuff. And the whole time, Taylor is on Google Earth looking at his phone going, yeah, I think we turn right here. I think we turn left here. There's tracks on my GPS where I've circled an island about 8 times just staying on plane to just to decide
avoid
where to
it.
Turn next.
Yeah.
So we get up to this tight bend and I run a JH Outlaw, which absolutely turns on rails.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't when you let off of the throttle, apparently. But I didn't know how deep this drain is, and so we're shooting through there pretty quick, and Taylor's yelling at me, hard left, and I'm telling him, I got it, and I didn't got it. And so I come off of the throttle thinking that, I can bank my boat around.
Yeah. Well,
unfortunately, it was a very high tide, and it acted more as a ramp. And the only thing left in the water in the back of my boat was about where the transducer would be at. That was the only thing left in the water. And to make matters worse, I was going that fast trying to stay on plane. Well, Taylor gets out to try to, you know, see what kind of situation we're in, and he's up to his chin in water.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, so every time we've been back there since then, we've putted through it. But
how'd you get out?
Well, it's one of those places where there's about 2 people on my list of friends that knew where it was at, and a friend of mine was in Angleton. It took him 4 hours to get to us. Taylor and I didn't there was no beer in the boat. We sat there and made fun of each other and whatnot, but it took 8 hits from a 250 horse Mercury to get me back in the water.
Pulling you backwards.
Yeah, and then we putted right out of all that stuff I was trying to stay on plane in. But the
point of the boat ramp confessional, everybody who says, oh, that's never happened to me, is lying.
If you're a red fisherman that's never banked a boat, you're fishing everybody else's fish and doing it wrong, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and even just stupid stuff at the boat ramp. Like, I've done stupid. I've left my truck. Y'all have heard this story. I've left my truck and the boat trailer in the water while I took off fishing.
Oh, well,
I mean,
it's a rite of passage.
Keep your head down when you come back and everybody's looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything coming to mind?
Yeah, I was tied up at Charlie's Bait Camp in Sargent on Caney Creek, and we had an outgoing tide. I only tied one rope on to the front of my boat.
I know what happened.
Or actually, it was tied to the back cleat of my boat, and I had my the nose of my boat pointing down the creek. I run around to get my truck, and I back down. But while I'm backing my trailer down, I see my boat going across the ramp. Right? It got loose. A big offshore boat had
just
come
floating
by.
On down the creek.
A big offshore boat had come by and knocked my rope loose. Well, I put my truck in park. I jump up on the bank, and I'm already, you know, throwing stuff out of my pockets.
Yeah.
And I took a second, and I realized, I was like, my motor has turned to the left, and it's getting closer to me.
Yeah.
I was able to run down five docks and step on the bow of my boat.
Oh, my gosh.
Never had to get wet.
So it just kind of angled slowly toward you.
Yeah, and it was cold, too, so I was really not looking forward to it.
Patrick, I don't know if you've ever done anything, but I know your dad has, Tommy.
Yeah, so what about you? Growing up, we were fishing out of a 1988 McKee craft.
I know, I was fishing out of that once.
Yeah,
I fished out of it a time or two. I fished out of that boat.
Yeah, a lot of people fished out of that boat. So we had been running a 21-foot Explorer for a long time, and that boat had been sitting in the shop. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from college, and my dad was like, well, let's go get that boat. You can fish that one this week. And we needed more than one boat, basically. This boat hadn't been ran in I don't know how long.
Right.
And it fired right up. That was back when Evinrude still made a good motor. those old school trailers have rollers on them, unlike the ones we do now. So, you know, now you unhook your boat before you back it down.
Right.
My dad wasn't thinking. He unhooks it. I'm in the boat, and he starts backing down. Well, that boat starts rolling off the trailer. And he starts to notice it, so he just puts it in reverse and slams it down, and we barely got it in the water in time before the back end.
So it, like, jumped off the trailer?
Well, no, it was just trying to slowly slide.
That's what
off
I mean.
The,
you had to get it onto the water, or else it would hit a pavement.
Oh, yeah.
He would
have dumped it straight onto the parking lot.
Right.
But everything was good. I think it still hit the bottom of the concrete as we dumped it in.
That's all right.
And, yeah.
That's the voice you heard is Captain Patrick Gardner. The other one's Captain Nick Mosley and Captain Caleb McCumber. Where can people find you? Patrick, start with you, because I know that people love to fish with you, but maybe you can have some newcomers that are going to be interested.
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Captain Pat Gardner, or on Instagram. And then I'm running trips now for actually Nick with Saltwater Addiction. So I'm with Saltwater Addiction. You can get with him or check out his website and give him a call or give me a call on my cell phone.
Nick, Saltwater Addiction?
It's www.saltwateraddictionguideservice.com. Mm-hmm. Me and Pat are actually cousins.
Oh, yeah, I should have mentioned
and
that.
And growing up, he fished with my dad a lot as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I should have meant that. I should have mentioned that. Caleb, anybody want to get in on you, get some redfish, get some trout?
Oh, yes, I'm a Captain, CAPTCaleb.com, Captain Caleb McCumber on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm just regular Caleb McCumber on Facebook. I think I have a business page on Facebook, but I'm terrible about keeping up with it.
Go ahead.
I also have a Facebook and Instagram, too, and it's nmosley79.
All right. Well, this has been fun. We're going to do it again because we didn't get to all the topics we wanted, but this is the Bite Me podcast. I'm John Lopez. Captain Scott Null deferred to these great guides of mine, friends of mine, right here on the Bite Me podcast. Send us questions. You can reach those guys where they just mentioned. You can send questions for the next podcast to @LopezOnSports on Twitter, Lopez on Sports on Instagram. Obviously, I'm on Facebook as well, John Lopez. I'm going to do another show with these guys. There's a lot more to get to. I know it's interesting, and we'll get Captain Scott Null back as well. It's going to be a little windy. If you're in one of those charity tournaments, if you're just fishing for fun, hope you get some tight lines out there, and we will talk to you next time.